You're listening to Too Soon Podcast.
What's up, everyone? My name is Belinda Joe. I've been described as loud, aggressive, a drag queen who lives for the drama, often referred to as Linda Sojourner Truth, aka Linda Controversy Ho, aka Basic Black Drag Queen. But despite what you think you know about me, people tell me I'm really nice, and I choose to believe them.
Hey, it's your girl, Malaya Marvel. I'm Wisconsin's favorite drag superhero, and I'm one of Linda's good Judies that she brought in to give you all the tea on what's happening in pop culture, and we're going to keep it nerdy and throw in some spicy anime culture as well.
Hi, everyone. This is Melee the Queen, chameleon of your dreams, model on the scene from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, here filling in for Gemma Stone.
That was good. We're good. Thank you, Melee.
You're welcome.
Yeah, Melee, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Excited to be here.
Yeah. Since you're going to be our guest for the evening and also our guest host, I was figuring we can start off with our little, like, you know, quick little interview and, you know, get caught up on what's hot and, you know, popping with Melee right now.
Okay.
Yes, I'm excited. You know, well, I know what's going on with you for the most part because, you know, we talk every once in a while, but let, you know, catch us up. What's going on? What projects are you super excited about right now?
Currently, I just started at a Hamburger Mary's in Milwaukee as a show director. So I got a show a month, and I'm very excited to have something back on, you know, back on the calendar that's structured like it used to be.
That's exciting.
Still working, day job at an Italian restaurant. There are a few projects coming up. It's just kind of on and rotating. Lately doing some interviews. Yesterday I was interviewing with Chasing the Storm with Vivian Storm from California.
I saw that. How was that? I popped in for like 2 seconds. Y'all look so cute.
Oh, it's permanently on her Facebook. So just, you can check it out. But super fun. You know, we love Vivian.
Very much so. So, Melee, speaking of performance, and we know that you're very well known for all of the different creative and very conceptualized concepts that you bring to your drag. So what was it like coming up with your process, and what is your process actually? So do you storyboard? Do you get the pieces together and let them guide you?
I would explain my process as complete chaos because it's kind of more of like an assignment-based thing. Like, if there's a show that I'm excited about doing, I want to bring a new idea. And so therefore I'm like just online looking at what other people are looking at, screenshotting, saving into my Instagram story to like come back to, or just looking up other people's makeup and trying to form fit it to myself. It's like lip syncing. You're using other people's words to explain your actions in performance.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that, where I kind of chaotically take in all this information. Like at the beginning, it was a lot of Alexander McQueen. It was a lot of America's Next Top Model. And then I try to make myself fit into that mold, but like make it so that I can prove that I can do this or do that or do this that people would expect from a performer or a creative. And I think that comes from always having assignments in like college and high school on art. So it's like I have to mentally assign myself, but I'm still that student that does it the night before, if that makes it any.
I feel that. I think that's a drag queen. That's a drag queen staple. We all wait until the last second. We're just like, okay, girl, I had this full concept that was going to take 40 weeks to make, and we're going to start tonight.
Yeah.
We are all procrastinators. Like, but it looks, so it sounds like you pull a bunch of different references from different places, and you like just kind of like make an amalgamation of all the different things that inspire you for whatever task you're assigned.
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a really big misconception about like overall drag and conceptualizing and everything. It's just like it's using what you know outside of drag too. Like, don't just reference other drag and then wonder why it's not evolving for you, because you're using people who are also evolving technically alongside you.
Exactly.
I also wanted to ask you, like, so what inspired your drag character? I know you've probably given this answer like 1,000 times, but we had it on here, and like, you know, for shits and giggles, what inspired Melee McQueen in your drag character and persona?
Originally, everything that Melee is was basically what I like to do in high school. And what I like to do in high school was watch America's Next Top Model and dress my friends up and force them into photo shoots. I would literally color their hair, buy them outfits, and be like, okay, you get to keep all this, and I'm just going to put you in this lake, and you're going to do these things, like these photos that like I show them references and do it for them too. And then after a certain point, it was just like, you know, no one is going to take time out of their busy lives to do this when they really weren't interested to begin with, but I was still interested in it. So when Drag Race came out, it was very obvious that I could be also a female impersonator artist who could capture imagery or perform in this manner and do those challenges that I liked replicating.
So instead of dressing other people up, you were like, I just dress myself up.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's always interesting to hear that too, because I feel like a lot of times like queens come into it. Once they're getting started, it starts off as I want to, you know, emulate certain things, or I want to do certain things, or I want to create certain things. And then there's like this aha moment where we realize, oh, I can be, you know, the medium. I can be what I'm putting everything on to create my art. And I think that's like a sense of, it kind of frees people who really get into drag, because they end up, you know, you're carrying your art with you at all times. And that's always a nice process to like finally understand that. Because like speaking for myself, I always wanted to like role play and do like video games and all that neat good stuff. And we would, you know, my parents would always develop characters and all that neat good stuff when we were kids, because we would play Dungeons and Dragons. And drag allowed me to realize, oh, all those characters that I was creating, I can become those characters now. I can turn myself into, you know, whichever person that I was fighting with or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love that. I don't even know. For me, I think that I saw drag queens on TV. I don't know if I've ever said this in a pod, but like, so the first time I ever saw a drag queen, I snuck into a gay club when I was 15 with my best friend who was 17. And we saw a drag queen, but she was also a trans woman. So I thought that drag was only for trans women. And like, the first time I did drag was in high school for this boy's beauty pageant. And I was like, you know, I just wanted to do it for fun. And I was like, I know I'm gonna win because, you know, I am that bitch. And or at least I thought I was anyway. And I won, but I didn't really try drag or think that it was something that I could do as like a career or a creative outlet, because I thought that it was for trans women. And it wasn't until Drag Race that I found out that it wasn't. And it didn't take until after I had like graduated college and was like really like in the depths of my depression and anxiety, when I was like, you know what, I need something that's gonna make me happy and something that's gonna allow me to be able to perform and show my art and, you know, be creative. And drag was that thing, and drag kind of helped pull me out of my depression.
I feel that
drag saves lives.
It really does. I was just thinking, like, something that I always find to be interesting as a similarity between the three of us is that we all kind of got started in drag later in life in comparison to a lot of people who are doing it now. Some of the kids are doing it, at, like Linda was saying, you know, like 15, 16, they're getting started and coming out and they want to pursue it as a career. But I know for you and myself, like, we didn't start until we were like in our early 20s, like almost done with college and stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's like a really good point to like point out in your development as an entertainer, because you've been able to like push yourself despite not coming in at the same time as a lot of these younger people who are doing it now. And there's just like a different vantage point that you see.
Yeah. We were starting when Miss Fame was the only makeup tutorial.
Okay. Speaking of makeup, how was your experience with Cosmo Queens? Like, that is such an honor to be able to be put on that type of platform. And I was so proud of you, just speaking personally for myself. But just like, what was that experience like and what did it mean to you?
Well, first and foremost, when I found out, I was shook, because James was literally like, you just want to do a thing? And I was like, what do you mean? She was like, Cosmo was looking for extra people and they saw this thing like on Instagram that you did. And then they emailed me. So I had, so first and foremost, I referenced a makeup artist on Instagram at Erin Stray. And it was something that I have loved since the beginning of time. You know me, butterflies and skulls.
Yes.
And specifically, I did this makeup for a Halloween kind of chit chat interview with Stacy, Stacy Sage from Milwaukee, who just moved back to Milwaukee, actually. And so, like I said, I do things because of assignment. So I was like, that's the closest thing that's inspiring right now. It looks Halloween-y, but it's also my taste because I love the beauty of Butterflies and Skulls from Alexander McQueen, because it represented like life and death and renewal and like how fast everything moves. And so back to the process, I did that. They saw that. And then James referenced me as an extra possibility. And they saw it, they emailed, they reached out. I didn't get to go to like New York or anywhere to like film because of COVID. I just did it at James's and Ernie's place, and Ernie filmed it in their studio. And it only took 3.5 hours.
You know, that's not that bad though.
That's not that bad for all that. And I'm shook that it's at, I think, 88K on Facebook. And yeah. And it reaffirmed a lot because I was like, this is a step that a lot of people don't get.
Yeah. Is it okay if we switch gears a little bit?
Sure.
So I just wanted to get your insight on just being one of the very few Asian entertainers that we have in Wisconsin in general, and sometimes even in the Midwest. Like, there's not a lot of exposure that I see for Asian entertainers. So how has that been just developing throughout your career, and how has that affected your journey?
I would say that I spent a certain amount of time, sadly, trying to ignore the fact that I am the only Asian, but I have used it as promotional as the only Asian drag queen in Wisconsin, at least for the time being or from what I know. But there are a lot of Asian drag queens in the Midwest, especially in Chicago. Oh my God, there's so many though. And they inspire me a lot, but it's also very isolating because of location and distance. Like, I'm not fully 100% in the community. And I never really was, because like my family isolates themselves from anybody else.
Okay.
So I do promote myself as an Asian drag queen, and I do fully love the fact that I have that history and that background in my family. But I'm trying as of lately to reconnect with that, because I was having an issue with identifying with it to begin with at all, because I don't see representation in the queer community here in Milwaukee.
I feel that. So we know we're going through hard times right now with everything that's happening with,
yes, ma'am,
you know, the pandemic and just trying to keep our wits about us. But I know that there has been a lot of like horrible backlash towards the Asian community just because of certain associations that our previous administration had made to the virus and everything. So I just wanted to get a little bit of your insight on your viewpoint on things that happened and how we can be better allies as people who are not Asian to just help uplift the community and say that these are things that we care about and that we don't stand for.
Yes. I did a little research this morning and had to rethink over how I feel about it as a person who's lived as Asian my whole life and went to school and dealt with the bullying. And basically, it's so strange to have it like out there in the media now at a certain forefront, especially after the Black Lives Matter movement, because it literally feels like we're going from one elementary bullying issue to another when it should have been stopped at the forefront when you saw your kids doing it. Because, you know, wasn't a week in my life where I didn't like have someone pull their eyes back and go and sing, you know, those songs that we all know, or make fun of what I brought for lunch, or like say that the food that I have stinks or whatever the hell, you know. I'd like to highlight the fact that the people being attacked are elderly, which is completely inexcusable in my notion. Like, first of all, okay, fighting fairly with someone else your own age, your business, right? I don't know. I don't condone that either. But people are straight up attacking elderly people in their own like safe space. Like, you're going out to Chinatown to attack an old man on the street.
It's disgusting.
It doesn't make any sense, because this person didn't do anything. Like, they're not coming to you for anything. And like, a man has died because you pushed him down. Like, literally, you might have thought this was like a simple hate crime. And that's disgusting to even think that anyone can just think it's like a simple thing to do this to somebody. But you hindered people's families. You make a whole community fear for their lives. And you're just representing that these things can continue just happening and you think it's going to be okay. But at the end of the day, it's like the backlash is nobody's going to trust each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's gross.
It really is.
I was very upset when Lucky Lose on the East Side had to shut down for a time because legitimately their drivers were getting hate crimed or like being like people throwing racial slurs at them. I'm like, how are you going to come into a workplace or order and then like set them up to, you know, to attack them? And he's like, we're already struggling in the pandemic and you're setting up a business to fail. And they had to literally shut down from all the negative, nasty things being said or done to them.
And had you not told me that, I would have never known. Because I when I used to live on the East Side, I love Lucky
Lose. I love Lucky Lose. I was going to say that. I was mad when I went by there. They were like, we're not open right now. I was like, oh, okay.
Like, legitimately, they put it on their Instagram and they had to like tell people this is because y'all being nasty people and we can't deal with it right now. So we're just shutting down. And I'm like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I think we need a little bit more cultural appreciation because I think a lot of times people see the differences and they go other or something's not quite, you know, like this or this doesn't fit this framework. So there must be something wrong. But we need to understand that our differences are what make us, you know,
stronger.
That is a good way of putting it. We need to get a little bit closer to trying to understand each other again instead of just dismissing each other.
And also get rid of all these white people.
I'm not dealing with you right now.
You see, we already got rid of Gemma.
Stop it.
I'm just kidding. She'll be back next week.
We love you, Gemma. We love you, Gemma.
I'm mad that she's not here to ask me more questions.
I think that was all the questions, wasn't it? Sorry.
Yeah, I think that's everything. We were going to do a speed round of Too Soon or Too Late, but since you're going to be our guest host tonight, then you can just stick around and do Too Soon and Too Late with us in our regular little format.
Hey.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool. So we'll take a quick little break and we'll be right back with Too Soon.
Guys, it's like the first time we've all worked together since like the Bucks game.
All three of us have not been in the same. The last time we were all in the same place was for Galentine's Day.
Oh, yeah. When we did the photo shoot and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. That was cute. We looked good, too.
Yeah. We looked stunning.
And gotta put those photos up.
I need to put those photos up. I was like, oh, I'm going to put it up for Galentine's. And then y'all both put them up and I didn't do that. Damn.
I took it down, though, just because I wanted to reformat.
Yeah.
I'm going to put them back up.
Working on your grid. You were working on
Instagram started flagging my past posts about adult content. I'm like, there's nothing. I'm literally sitting in my underwear. They started flagging. So I just had to take down a whole bunch of things so I wouldn't get deleted. And like, I had to reformat a whole bunch of things.
Once you get past a certain amount of followers, so they will like.
They're going to monitor everything.
Yeah.
So like, honestly, you probably could have fought them on it. Cause I know like a lot of people will be like, no, this is fine. I have on underwear. Like, it doesn't matter. You like appeal it and then they'll have like a week to have an actual human look at it. And then they'll usually be like, oh, it's fine.
Well, quit trying to be a thirst trap, Melee. That's your own fault. Put some clothes on, Melee.
Sometimes it's just, I need the validation.
Soon Podcast.
Okay, Greg Abbott. So we know who to yell at.
Yes. What he do?
He's the one who's mandating. Well, he's getting rid of the mandates.
Yeah, he's the governor of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, I just want you guys to know, he's also disabled. He's handicapped. He's in a wheelchair.
Okay.
So he's high risk.
We're not going to say anything that's ableist.
Oh, no. They call him Hot Wheels in Texas.
No, ma'am. I am not doing that.
They call him Hot Wheels.
Y'all see how they did Trixie now. Don't be on here talking. Don't call nobody Hot Wheels, Lord.
And, I mean, he's a Republican scumbag, so we can call him Hot Wheels.
We could say it don't make no sense with him being at risk.
Yeah.
And so he got hit by a tree a tree fell on him when he was a younger child.
I'm dead.
And like, honestly, if the
tree... Dick, I try to put you out before you try to put us all out.
If he would have just been a little bit closer to that tree...
We wouldn't have to deal with this right now.
Okay.
You know, I don't wish bad things upon you, but I do wish bad things had happened to you.
All right, and welcome back to Too Soon. We just wrapped up our interview with Melee McQueen, and she's going to be joining us as we get into some great political topics.
Oh, so starting shit, off, we forgot to do Too Soon.
Oh, fuck, you're right. Oh, shit. Okay, well, do you want to do Too Soon first? Let's do Too Soon first, and that'll be easier.
Yeah, okay.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the pod. We have Melee McQueen in the house with us, and she's going to be sticking around for the whole episode as our guest host, filling in for Gemma Stone. And and we're going to start like we always do. First up is going to be Too Soon. So this week, is it too soon to talk about Raven doing blackface?
Oh, Lord, here we go. I can see it already.
Or is it black? Should we say black fishing? Is it too late for us to talk about Raven black fishing?
Either I would say black fishing. I think black fishing is the more appropriate terminology for this situation.
Yeah, for sure.
Melee, thoughts?
It's really hard because she's a makeup icon to a lot of drag queens, and she's been a role model for so damn long. I'm just kind of like, can she lighten that up just a few shades to be correct?
I'll just say it. I saw a couple images, and she was standing next to Rue, and they could have been siblings. And I was like, oh, okay, girl.
While she's doing Rue's makeup, she just touches up her own.
Exactly. So, you know,
sharing the same foundation.
I was about to say, it saves on the kit. She only got to buy two colors now.
A lot of people were trying to say, oh, it's the lighting, or, you know, that's how she's always done her makeup. And like, but you can clearly see photos of her without makeup or photos of her at different times.
Yeah.
Throughout her career where she was not the brown skin diva she is today.
I would say, looking at it, I don't necessarily believe that she's trying to do anything that's like racially insensitive on purpose. I do think the effect of it is a little racially insensitive, but I think she's trying to go for like that Instagram baddie. Like a lot of the girls are going for this merging to the middle, where the girls who are a little bit lighter want to get a little bit darker and the girls who are darker want to get a little bit lighter. So I don't think she's necessarily trying to emulate another race per se. I think she's just trying to go for this racially ambiguous look that's popular right now amongst the girls who are doing like the social media and this, that, and the other. With all that being said, I don't think it's the smartest choice to make, but, you know, to each their own.
I saw that there was also commentary in combination with that, with her calling certain ethnicities by, you know, their food references.
Oh, yeah, she does do that.
Oh, yeah, she did that. So it's like being insensitive is one thing, but then like when you know that you are a social media figurehead, like legitimately you and Raja host and talk about the runways for Drag Race and are consistent visual input output for people paying attention. Do y'all think that she should adjust because she is a role model or just keep doing what she thinks is for her?
I think she should do whatever she thinks works for her. My whole thing is I always tell people this all the time. They can twist it however they want when I have these debates. You are an adult. You can do whatever you want. You cannot control people's reaction to what you do. So if you're going to do it, be prepared and understand that people aren't going to agree with you necessarily all the time and live in that. And I think Raven does do that. You know, she's a self-proclaimed bitch. She will do whatever she feels like doing and she'll stand in it. Does it make it right? No, but what can I tell her? She's a grown man, you know? I think I do remember the food comments and everything. I think there was a certain queen that we, you know, she's one of the she's who shall not be named, brought up that Raven had qualified people on her dating apps. I think it was Grindr or something like that. She referred to certain people as being spice and certain people as being rice and certain people as being other things. And she was qualifying who she liked based on those types of things. And that's where that came from.
I mean, well, you know, here's the thing. She has always been a tad problematic from the beginning. You know, there's been a lot of little instances where she's done something or said something and the girls have been like, you know, was that right for her to say or do? You know, so outside of the bitchiness, because, you know, it's like it's one thing to be bitchy. But I think that when it comes to Raven, I think she's stunning. She's beautiful. And she absolutely is painting a couple shades too dark. And she absolutely doesn't give a fuck what anybody thinks about it.
You're right. And like, girl, if you're going to do it, just stand in it and be proud in it. I might fuck with it, but you know what? Do what you do over there. So do we think it's too soon to be talking about this? I personally think it's
I think it's too late, honestly.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's been past time to be talking about this. We've been talking about it, and it's just like,
yeah.
I mean, at this point, though, I feel like if you're going to be controversial in the way that she's being controversial, I mean, at least the girl's doing it, you know, in a way where she's maintaining herself. So kudos to her.
At least she looks stunning while she's doing it.
Exactly.
Right, right. I was like, that face is good. Is it for you?
She's a brown skin diva, and we love to see it.
Hey. We stan our faux black queen. Look at
she's just living her Motown fantasy. That's all it is.
You know, she's giving the girls Kylie Jenner.
Yes, that's a perfect way to put it.
She's giving the girls Kim Kardashian.
There you go.
She's giving the girls J-Lo.
I mean, J-Lo already had, you know, J-Lo had a little more, you know, she was somewhere in the melanin spectrum. Well, we're all there, but
shout.
I think they were upset because, you know, back in the day, she used to use the N-word a lot in her music. And I don't want to say a lot, but she was, I think it was Ain't That Funny. She has said the N-word and she got a pass on that. And then she referred to herself as a black girl in Spanish or something in one of her recent songs, and people were saying, oh, J-Lo, when did you become an Afro-Latina? I don't know personally if she's ever really identified as an Afro-Latina, but you know, that's a very difficult line to walk across, because you know,
that's a bold statement.
People you know, they have their opinions on like cultures and how they mix and da, da, da. You know, it, you know,
she Puerto Rican.
Exactly. She got some black in there.
I'm gonna drop in the T.S. Madison little sound bite.
But the girl that played her Puerto Rican.
That's not the point, though.
J-Lo, she Puerto Rican.
That's not the point, though. She's playing the real person.
Girl.
But oh my God.
Being honest, though, like, I like, my family, I have a lot of family that's from Puerto Rico. I used to live in Puerto Rico. Like, I used to go when I was a kid. Like, the way that race and race relations are viewed are a little bit different. And there is a lot of mixing where you'll have families where you have, like, cousins who are, like, my complexion and darker. And then a lot of my cousins are, you know, they damn near can pass, you know, blonde hair, green eyes, whatever. So I think there's just a little bit of a disconnect when it comes to like Caribbean and American culture when it comes to race relations. And J-Lo just happens to be a casualty of that sometimes.
Look, she has her line at Kohl's and she's perfectly fine where she is in life.
Exactly. Like, she's not thinking about us. How we get on J-Lo? We were talking about Raven.
Yeah, I don't know. Because, you know, she be blackfishing.
Yeah, you know. The girls do what the girls do.
Yeah, the girls do. All right, that's all I have for Too Soon. Did you have anything, Malaya's, at all?
Oh, no, that's all I had.
All right.
I thought that was good.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap it up. We will be right back with politics after this.
You're listening to Too Soon Podcast.
All right. Welcome back to Too Soon. We just took a short break and now we're going to dive into some politics. So coming up, I know this is near and dear to your heart, Miss Linda Jo. We're going to be speaking on the choices made down in Texas to end the mask mandate and reopen completely. So this is, I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to let y'all take it.
First of all, it's absolutely insane. It's ridiculous. I think Joe Biden called it Neanderthalic. Like, it's literally, it makes no human sense.
Absolutely not.
The numbers are already starting to rise back in Texas. So, like, everywhere in the country, the numbers have dropped dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a few states where the numbers are slowly on the uptick. Texas is one of those states. There was a study that came out that said in Houston, every variant of COVID already in Houston, because, you know, Houston is an international city. It's a global city. It's one of the most diverse cities in the United States. And like, because of that, because of the, you know, there's constantly, you know, international travel through our city. There is a good chance that all of the variants are already in Houston. And he wants to open up. It blows my mind because so many people here don't want the state to reopen, but he's doing it simply because of the crazy Trump conservatives in Texas that he needs in order to get reelected.
And it's gross what people will do to further their own agendas and their career or this and the other, because there are so many people, even within just the state of Texas, who have been affected by losing a family member or a friend or whatever the case may be. It doesn't, the people, and then just the people who have died, like, that should be two people should be enough for you to say, we need to do something about this. But looking at the numbers where we're approaching almost what it's like between 40 and 45,000 people who have died in Texas alone. And we think that it's a good time to open back up when we don't really have a full grasp on how the virus is going to mutate in the first place. They're already talking about reworking the vaccines that we do have coming out because of all of the mutation that we're seeing. And I just want to touch on another part of it. Do you think that there would be less of a push to open back up if we weren't seeing the numbers disproportionately affecting people of color? That's been a big thing that they have talked about, that a lot of the people in Texas who are taking the brunt of the pandemic's wrath, you know, just like everywhere else, are Black and brown people.
Of course, of course. It would not be the same if it was ravaging white communities the same way it was communities of color. Mm-hmm. And also, he's doing this to deflect from the fact that last week, a lot of Texans didn't have water or power. Mm-hmm. So people were already mad at Abbott. So and Greg Abbott, I guess in his mind, said, oh, you know what'll make my supporters happy? If I open Texas back up.
That's so stupid.
And, you know, because everyone was upset with Abbott for how he handled the, you know, the winter storms that came through and decimated a lot of Texas infrastructure and power infrastructure. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Pipes, there are people who still don't have water. They don't have running water or hot water at their homes. There are people who, even though they have power now, mm-hmm. you know, like they're they're still trying to catch up from the week or over a week that they went without power. So they have to get food because they didn't have any, you know, all their food's gone bad. That's why there's food pantries trying to open up and give people food and mm-hmm. water still in Texas. And now he wants to open the entire state.
It makes it no just, sense.
Yeah.
Well, he's like, while you have no power or electricity, I also want you to get sick.
Exactly. It's like, what? That makes no sense. It's like, how many plays can we throw at you at one time? You know, I just want to say we need to be supporting and sending out love and energy and also donations. We'll find some organizations and everything. We're going to put them down in the links below so that we can be supporting our brothers and sisters and all of our non-binary family down in Texas, because this is just too much. They've been getting hit left and right. And to see your leadership treat you like this is saying that from his mouth that he feels that it is a different time in the pandemic for the state of Texas. Because now that they have an abundance of PPE, personal protective equipment, gloves, masks, whatever, and they have the ability to test people and start getting people vaccinated, that it shouldn't be that big of a deal to open the state back up. And that is completely stupid. Like, I'm paraphrasing, but that makes no sense. It's just like, okay, so we have everything we need to make sure people don't get sick. So let's just open back up and watch people get sick, but we can fix them now. I don't get it.
But you can't, that's not... I think America handled a lot of this the completely wrong way, with completely shutting down and then now completely reopening. Like, these movements are not making any sense to me.
And then the shutdown was, it, first of all, we didn't shut down long enough.
Exactly.
We didn't appropriately shut down because there were places who still never completely shut down.
And, yeah.
Or, you know, went into lockdown. And we opened up way too early. Opened up.
Definitely.
The moment the numbers dipped a little bit, they're like, oh, we're good. Let's open up, you know? And
there was no follow through. It seemed like a platitude, because it was just kind of like, okay, we're going to shut down because this is what we should be doing. And then it was just like, as soon as there was like backlash and there was, you know, outrage from the people who just apparently don't care about those who could be affected, then we started talking about opening things back up way ahead of time. Like, then we see other countries who are doing beyond what we're doing, like way much better, because they actually follow through with what they should have been doing.
And it's, you know, honestly, it really sucks, because if they wanted to open up schools first, mm-hmm. they should have vaccinated every teacher before they vaccinated anybody else.
Agreed.
If they want these bars and restaurants to open and these grocery stores
to relax their, you know, mask mandates and capacities and shit. You should have been vaccinating all, but you know what? It's a lot of minorities and poor people who work in the service industries and retail. But these jobs, these are the essential workers, the frontline workers that we need to protect. People who work at grocery stores, they are essential to our fucking country. People have to eat and drink. The people who work in these places need to be safe.
Maylin needs to be able to go buy her water.
Girl, I do.
Now, the other thing is the stimulus checks. They have the stimulus package, the COVID relief bill was passed in the House already. It went on to the Senate, and the Senate has not yet passed it. I know that they were... One of the things I know that they did do is that they lowered the amount of the cap-off amount for you to receive the stimulus check. So originally, you know, if you were making $100,000 a year, you could get the stimulus.
But now you can't. Oh yeah, they kept it at 80,000. Yep. So you can't get it now. Well, I'm making nowhere near that, so I guess, you know, we still
I'm still good. Now, and then for those couples who are making 200,000, now couples making 160,000 and single people making 80,000 now will no longer receive the stimulus. And honestly, like, it starts fading out at 75,000 for a single person and 150,000 for a couple, which means it's like, it's so if you make $5,000 more, that's too much.
Right.
That's too much to get the stimulus. But if you made $5,000 less, all of that was going to go to taxes anyway.
I just don't get it. Like, they've been, they know what's going on. They know we have this issue. They've seen the outcry. They understand, you know, what it is that the public is looking at. So why hasn't there been more of a push towards, you know, some
helping anyone?
Exactly, some tangible help. You know, I mean, $600 was cute, you know, never say no.
That's great. I was supposed to be living in my house for a whole year.
I mean, it was cute in the sense of like, okay, sis, that was something. All right, so when are we actually gonna do something? There was this GIF meme that was going around or something like that, and it was like, for a dollar and such and such 50 something cents a day, you too can sponsor an American. It's like, why aren't we, you know, why aren't we actually taking care of the people who are taking care of this country? It's going to reflect on the Biden administration, because there's so much pressure that's going to be put on this administration to reverse a lot of the things that we have seen in the past 4 years. And this just isn't a good look for them at this point.
That legitimately triggered a memory in my brain when I was a kid and I asked my parents, hey, why don't we donate to any of these, like, the nighttime infomercials for those kids in Africa and whatnot? Mm-hmm. And my dad literally looked me in the eye and said, we can't even take care of the people in this country.
Right.
And I was 10, sis. I was like 10 and I was like, what?
And now
I'm looking back, I'm like, damn, we really can't take care of the people in our own country.
That was real. That was a good lesson.
Mm.
Yeah, because shit, we definitely cannot take care of the people in our own country. We don't give a fuck. The amount of money that other countries have given their citizens is for stimulus, like, it far exceeds what we have got.
I thought we were supposed to be the land of the not so great anymore right now.
You know, supposed to be the greatest country in the world, but it's not.
Right now, we're the land of like the meh. You know,
the man.
Yeah, they the country isn't giving what it said it was supposed to have gave.
You know,
so hopefully Joe Biden will put pressure on to get this fucking COVID relief bill passed. They only have, I think, until March 14th until the package that we previously passed with the $600 stimulus. That money runs out, I think, March 14th. So they need to have this bill passed by at least March 14th. So they got 10 days.
And I need to get it together.
This podcast comes out on Monday, which is the
8th.
They got 6 days to get that shit together.
So when am I supposed to receive the check?
Oh yeah, so if they pass it within 6 days, then we wouldn't get the check until like first week of April.
I mean, that's better than no check, but still, like, y'all need to get it together. Run me my money.
Hopefully they'll pass it tomorrow. Yeah. Or early next week. I think that's it for the news, though. We're workshopping a title. We may be calling it, you know, late news. News too late.
News too late. I like
too soon for late news.
That's cute.
Who knows? So
find out on episode 3.
But yeah, we'll be right back with pop culture.
Yeah, pop culture. Yeah.
All right,
you're listening to Too Soon Podcast.
All right. Oh, wait, am I taking us into pop culture, or Linda, are you taking us back into pop culture?
Yeah, you can bring us into pop culture. I gotta find, I'm trying to pull up this RASB article.
Oh, okay, I got you. You know RASB, right, Melee?
Who?
You remember B2K from back in the day?
No.
You don't remember B2K, the singing group?
Wait.
Have you seen You Got Served?
Yes.
So basically everybody that was in the main dance crew that was trying to win, they were in B2K. And B2K was a big boy group in the 90s. In the early 2000s, they were like, you know Omarion?
Yeah, I know Omarion.
His group. He was the lead singer of B2K. And from the early 2000s, like right around the time they were breaking up the first time, a lot of allegations came out about there being like some sexual misconduct amongst the group and this, that, and the other.
Oh.
And then years later, it came out from RASB, who is the
backing vocalist.
Yeah, that too. He's one of the cousins of their manager at the time, Chris Stokes. And RASB, his mom was not doing so well. She was on drugs, whatever the case may be. So Chris Stokes ended up adopting RASB, and he was living with Chris Stokes full time the entire time that they were in B2K. He was his guardian. Come to find out that he was sexually assaulting RASB and some other young men who were part of the music industry that he was like guiding and grooming. And, you know, he's been very vocal about it in the past. And then he ended up moving to China for like 7-8 years because he got bullied so bad in the early 2000s. They made gay jokes about them. They talked about them horribly. And like, nobody wanted to work with them because it wasn't cool to be gay, you know, in hip hop at that time. But now he's coming back after all these years, and he just did some like really big interviews about it. And he's getting ready to put out a documentary that's going to like apparently blow the lid off of all of these allegations. And he's got receipts. And so that's what we're going to be talking about. And apparently Marcus Houston used to, you know, he used to
fuck around with him too.
Yeah, exactly. So they did some horrible things to this young man. So that's one of our topics.
Not Marcus Houston.
Yeah, Marcus Houston. Really? Yeah, Marcus Houston was the one that was supposedly, you know, he wasn't the ring leader, but he was the one that was like breaking the boys in because he was young himself at the time.
Not breaking the boys in.
I was listening to the interview and he would say like Chris would kind of send Marcus to mess with the boys and like feel them out. You know, he would be the one that would do certain things to them.
Not some weird fraternity fetish.
Yeah, it was so weird. Let me not misquote him, but I'm pretty sure he said like the abuse started happening when he was like 9-10 years old.
Jesus.
Chris was teaching him how to masturbate, and he said at the time, he was saying like at the time, you know, as a kid, you don't understand why your adult cousin is teaching you how to masturbate in a room full of other people. So yeah, makes me sad. I used to have a crush on Roger on Sister, so that hurts my feelings. Right?
It doesn't It doesn't surprise me, though. I mean, I was molested as a child and child, you know, like anybody.
You too? Mm-hmm. Everybody got a little, like all my friends in high school had a little story, and I was like, I got a little story too, and I don't know how to. It's weird because it's just like, it's in your brain, it happens, and then some people are very affected by it, and then some people pretend like it never happened. So it's going to normalize the conversation.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's always something that, like, for a long time, I dealt with it, you know, in a way where it was like, you know, it angered me a lot, and it frustrated me a lot, and I would go over it in my head, you know, because the abuse didn't stop until I was 11, from like ages 6 to 11. But it was, you know, something I thought about every other day, every other week until maybe I was 20.
Oh my goodness.
You know, it was still something that was there. You know, it was still something that like, you know, I would be angry that it happened to me, or I would be, mm-hmm. upset, yeah. you know, and that I would like, you know, relive and be angry about and wish that it wouldn't have happened to me or wish that it would have been different or wish that I would have did something different or, you know, like it's just all these different things. And then I just slowly erased it from my memory. You know, I tried to put away all of the feelings that I felt about being mm-hmm. sexually assaulted as a child.
Do you believe that this is a ploy to come back into the mainstream? Or is it just like him trying to clear out his conscience and let everybody know what's up?
I don't think it's a ploy. I do think it is a way for him to be able to, you know, talk about some of the stuff that he has going on. But I think it comes from a genuine, pure place because he literally ruined his career.
Yeah.
Trying to get justice for what was done to him and other people. So I don't think I don't think there's any cap there.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think he's doing this as a ploy. I think that he really is hurt about the things that happened to him and he wants people to believe him. I think he wouldn't still be making this an issue if he felt like he was believed.
Well, but you doing okay, Linda?
Yeah,
y'all okay?
Yeah.
I just want to say thank you both for sharing because that's really hard to, I know that's got to be hard to talk about that. I personally have never had an experience, but I've seen how it affects families. And I know, especially in Black families, that sometimes becomes a subject of taboo. We don't really talk about it and it can be something that gets swept under the rug. And, you know, that's just, you know, you're older, your creepy uncle or your creepy cousin or something like that. And I think it takes a lot of self-awareness and just a lot of healing to be able to, you know, speak about it. So I'm really proud of both of you. And I thank y'all for being, you know, open enough to share that.
Thank you. It's weird because it's like something I don't think about on a daily basis because I feel like it wasn't a consistent thing for me and it was from someone outside the house. So mm-hmm. It was easy to remove myself because that person was not in my life for very long.
Mm-hmm.
And I was young. So I was like, what is this? And then you think about it and you're like, oh shit, that was this. But you didn't like, it wasn't a concept back then.
Exactly. These people who do these things to children need to be put under the jail. Like they don't, they need to be like, it's horrific to think how you could take advantage of someone who doesn't even really understand the full grasp of what's happening. Like, I don't get it. And when it comes to, you know, young men, we as a society have historically shamed young men because, oh, it's somehow related to being feminine. And we don't respect femininity, you know, in our society a lot of the time.
You really don't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad he's having this conversation. Oh, he's putting out this conversation out there so people can be more open about it.
Yeah. Because it is hard, you know, I think especially like, I don't know. I don't know what my point is, but I do wish that it was easier for men to be open about their experiences. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the reason that they're not open is, you know, they're afraid to look weak because there's this idea of masculinity where you have to be strong and all that other stuff. And then the other part of it is they are afraid to be vulnerable.
Yeah, I think it all relates back to toxic masculinity and, you know, a patriarchal mindset where we, you know, you have to be tough and you have to be a man, you know, da 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 da. Men don't cry. Men can't this and the other. And I'll keep Rasby in my thoughts. And I really hope this goes well. And I really hope he gets the justice that he deserves.
Yes, thoughts and prayers. Thoughts and prayers. Should we get into this Real Housewives of Potomac scandal that kind of took over Twitter the other day?
I'm going to let you take that one because I honestly, ever since they got rid of Monique, who is, I'm going to go on record saying, is my favorite housewife of any franchise of all time. Ever since they got rid of her, like I haven't really been paying attention to Potomac.
I haven't been watching Housewives.
Yeah.
Explain.
Well, okay. So, well, first of all, they did not get rid of Monique. Monique left.
She quit. Yes. Monique she left on her own accord.
Yes. And they have replaced her with a new girl.
Mia Thornton?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, she's pretty. She's really pretty.
Yeah, she is very pretty. So apparently the new girl is going to be, there is a rumor, apparently, that one of the new girls, or not one of the new girls, but one of the housewives had an affair with one of the husbands.
Oop. Is it a show if there's not a scandal?
Exactly.
Right. And you know, I saw somebody on Twitter say, Real Housewives of Potomac never misses. They always bring the drama. And they do.
Potomac this past season, I was kind of glued to it. I was like, I want to know what's happening. I want to know what's going to be next. But I'm very surprised to hear that one of the husbands on Potomac would be having an affair, because the women on that particular franchise, the ones who are married, I feel like they would break somebody in half. You know, if they went near their husband or something like that. I couldn't imagine. I mean, I know they're not married anymore, Juan and Robin, but they're engaged again. I can't imagine anyone surviving coming after Juan, because Robin would probably like break them in two.
I am so glad Juan Dixon is not here right now.
Exactly.
Melee, I don't know if you've seen it, but that's a line that she said at the reunion of Real Housewives of Potomac this past season.
Well, they kept trying to push that narrative last season that Chris Samuels was so aggressive and he was so angry and he was always like coming at the girls and like, you know, being rude to the wives. I was like, he really didn't even say anything to them, and then Robin started popping off at the mouth. I was like, oh, so he can't defend his baby that y'all were spreading rumors about?
Yeah, it was a lot of drama season 5. And apparently Robin will not be coming back for season 6, which...
I thought she signed. She didn't?
I mean, she may have. She don't have a storyline.
Oh, well, duh.
There was rumors that she wasn't gonna be back. Unless the husband that was having an affair is Juan, she ain't gonna have no storyline.
I think that's what in my Real Housewives of Potomac, Atlanta, whatever, brain trying to put everything together, Robin needed a storyline. Rumor has it she better be thanking Monique that Monique quit, because she might not have come back if Monique was still there. And now I'm thinking she's like feeling the pressure to have a storyline. So this could have been something that she cooked up with one of the newer housewives to A, help them establish themselves in the franchise, because it's sometimes hard for them coming on to a new season. And B, have something for her to actually talk about, because we're tired of looking at her walking around her house with her kids. And, you know, Robin is a very beautiful woman and she does a lot of cool stuff. But when I watch The Housewives, I want to see jets and yachts, and I want to see people laid out for weeks in, you know, the Caribbean somewhere. And Robin, you know, she kind of doesn't have the coin for that.
Robin is not. Yeah, she...
Dang. Linda was like, how you on Real Housewives and your apartment looks like mine?
Okay.
I don't think whoever this girl is, I'm pretty sure she's not sleeping with Juan Dixon, because Robin would have killed her by now.
Here's the thing. There's a rumor that she was sleeping with or had an affair with Reverend Doctor, Pastor.
Oh, Pastor Holy Whore?
Yes.
Girl, that's not news.
Yeah.
That is not news. That's like, oh, okay, we knew that.
Yeah. So apparently, like, that's gonna be a Giselle storyline, is that the new housewife was sleeping with her ex-husband.
Oh, is that how she's gonna clean up him never wanting to be on the show and fully admitting that he did it for, you know, to help her get a check and to help her stay on the show? That's how they're going to clean it up. They're going to blame it on the new girl.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. And that may not be the case. Who knows how it's really going to shake down? But what I do know is that the rumors and the rumor mill and the girls on Twitter are saying that there's going to be an affair with one of the husbands and one of the housewives. So
how does this information collection happen for a television show like this?
Well, a lot of times they end up getting stuff from like tips and stuff.
Sometimes they come right from motherfucking housewives.
Yeah, exactly. They just make shit up.
They said, I moved in to be messy, and I am here to do exactly that.
Exactly.
So, I don't know. I think that for sure, whatever this next season of Real Housewives of Potomac brings, it will be interesting and spicy.
Spicy.
I don't know if I'm going to watch.
Probably not. We'll see. If the girls say it sounds good, maybe. But at first, I'm not going to jump into it like I need to watch.
I'm going to be hesitant because Monique won't be there.
I heard it also was going to be a big cast shakeup, too.
So,
Sorry. Since we're still on this subject. You know who it might actually be now that I'm thinking about it? Dr. Wendy's husband. Because supposedly he's going to be in the middle of a lot of fire this season with like a scandal and him supposedly cheating on Wendy and this, that, and the other. And like, I would not be surprised. Wow. Yeah. So it might be him.
And it could be him and the new girl, Mia.
Because,
you know, she's very pretty.
We love Potomac.
So the Golden Globes, they gave, they had their award ceremony. What was it, Sunday? Last Sunday?
Yep.
And did you get a chance to watch?
I fell asleep, but I know what you're talking about. You're talking about, I tried to watch it last night. I was falling asleep. The U.S. versus,
Billie Holiday. Billie Holiday.
Thank you.
And, Andrew Day played Billie Holiday.
Mm-hmm. Love her.
I think she did a fantastic job covering Billie Holiday's songs, and she really tried to embody the role and the character of Billie Holiday.
She actually did the singing?
Yeah, she's a great singer.
Yeah, Andrew Day is an excellent singer.
She sings that, that Rise Up song, and I'll rise up. You know, Melee said no. Melee's like, I don't know that one.
I know that song. Yeah. I know of that song. Don't tell me to lip sync it, but
yeah, you for sure heard it before. You've probably seen a drag queen randomly do a ballad of it at a drag show. So she did the role justice. I will say that she did a good job, but the movie altogether was just black trauma porn.
I got you.
And then also outside of like just looking at the story, it was so disjointed and like it didn't flow smoothly and it jumped around in weird ways. It was like little vignettes of her life, but it wasn't organized in a way that you could easily understand as a viewer.
Yeah.
And then they started the movie as a like, oh, spoiler alert. Sorry, people. They started the movie with her in an interview, like a radio interview or like a recorded interview like that, you know, recorded to tape because it wasn't not on film, just on tape.
Yeah.
It started there and then it rolled into a flashback that was, you know, supposed to be like the start of the story.
Yeah.
But then it didn't consistently go back and forth to the narrative from the point of view from the interview. So it's like they started off where it's like a POV of her retelling her story through the interview, but then they just forget all about the interview that she was having where the story was coming from, and they don't go back to it consistently. They randomly kind of go back to it, but then it's like it just jumps around, like the timeline jumps ahead of or like in the future of the interview. So then like the interview's gone completely. So it's like Interview with a Vampire, but like if the interview was only in like three scenes and then it was a whole bunch of other random scenes jumping around telling a story.
Awkward.
And like,
If you're going to do that, you need to have the person reacting to what they just told and back and forth.
Yeah.
To get the feeling. So I guess they just didn't know what she was feeling. They're just telling the story.
Yeah. It was all over the place. All of his
places. That's unfortunate. That's really unfortunate. But she won, so I'm here for her winning.
Yeah, but the acting was good despite the weird narrative. So
Now, would I say that it was an award-winning performance?
You wouldn't have seen it for them.
She had beautiful gowns.
I can't. I love her though. I really do love Andre Day. And I think she's a brilliant vocalist. And I feel like she has not gotten her just dues in the industry yet. So I like to see, you know, I like to see our sisters, you know, getting the accolades.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, here's the thing. I'm really curious to see if she continues to act. This was her first real acting role, you know, in a lead role. And she won at the Golden Globes. I wouldn't say, I think she won more so because of the story that they told, even though it was honestly, if you watch the movie, it was just trauma porn after trauma porn, like, you know.
Well, you know, that's the only way a black person can win.
And yeah, exactly.
Trauma,
yeah. So it's like watching her go through her drug addiction and, you know, be abused and go to jail and, you know, have the FBI following her, and like it was just all of this, like all of this trauma. One other thing to note, which I mean, this is strictly a Hollywood thing, and this is to me, I don't see any other reason for it. She lost 40 pounds for this role.
Wow.
Did they do the role? Yeah.
But Billie Holiday was not.
Yeah, I was gonna say she wasn't like
a very, very small, petite woman.
She was real.
She was a woman with, you know, a figure.
Yeah.
You know, she was thick. You know, she had a face. You could tell that, you know, she wasn't bone skinny. And Andra Day got really, really skinny for this role. And I feel like that was unnecessary. And that was just like a thing she did for the role simply to be on screen. And it didn't relate to the character at all.
I will say she does look great in the role, though.
She does.
I mean, she looked. I don't think she needed to lose the weight, because I've always thought she was a very pretty woman at any shape. But yeah, looking at her next to Billie Holiday, like, they did a good job casting.
For sure.
Mm. Yeah.
She really, really did nail the voice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say is, like, the wigs, some of the wigs in the movie.
Girl, you know, they do not care. They just be like, okay, we're going to give you a $5 wig budget. And then they had the girls walking around like, what was that bad hair movie? Did you see that on Netflix?
I haven't seen it.
I didn't get to see that.
It was, just look at the wigs.
So the Golden Globes, you know, they were under a lot of heat anyway, mm-hmm. because of all of the ethics criticisms, you know, apparently about, you know, first of all, there's not any people of color, any brown people or black people on there.
I did not know that.
On the Foreign Press Association's voting board, whatever the hell. And the other thing is, they have been bribed to give people certain awards. And there's like paper trails and stuff of like people receiving gifts and, you know, in order for certain celebrities to get a nomination or yeah. certain actors to get a nomination or win an award. And, this year kind of gives me like, oh, let's give some black people awards so maybe they won't be so judgy.
I mean,
because Chadwick Boseman also won for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Did you watch
Ma Rainey's? Ma Rainey's was really good.
Ma Rainey's was very, very good. It was very well done. And it's another role where, you know, the actor who won. And now we also know now that he was dealing with health issues, but the character that he played, he had lost a substantial amount of weight.
Yeah.
And he looked small and frail when he played that role. And it's like, you know, looking back now, knowing he was dealing with cancer, it kind of puts it in a different perspective, a different lens.
Yeah.
Such a legacy, like, for him to be working on all of the projects that he was working on and like nobody really having any idea of what was going on with him. And then just the caliber of his work while dealing with those health issues. Like, he's one of the greats and he always will be. And, you know, just gone too soon.
Yeah, for yeah. sure.
Girl, okay. Let's end that on a positive note. Would you watch the movie again?
Oh, you know what? Okay, here's the good thing. I would for sure watch Ma Rainey's Black Bottom again. And you know what? I would even rewatch Billie Holiday versus the U.S. so I can get a maybe if I watch it again, it'll
click better.
Yeah. You know, sometimes yeah. you watch it the second time and like, you know, just like you're like, oh, okay, now it's making sense. So,
I mean, yeah. I hated Django the first time I watched it. And then I watched it again. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess I can kind of deal with this.
It's mostly because I couldn't displace Jamie Foxx from that one sitcom he was in. I was like, oh, yeah. weird me out. Yeah. Weird me out.
Well, when we come back, we're going to get into our Too Late of the Week.
You're listening to Too Soon Podcast.
All right. Welcome back. We are getting ready to wrap up with the last topic of the night, of the day, of the morning. You'll probably be listening to this in the morning. and it is too late.
Do you want to elaborate?
For sure. Okay, so Trixie just released a new palette called Daytime Realness.
Yes.
And it is a palette with 8 shades. It's a mini palette. And what I will say is I love the package. It's like a little CD or like a little cassette tape, and I like the whole theme and idea behind the palette and the colors.
Yeah, you super know? Cool.
It's like I think the whole like 80s, like electric blue fun. I get it. I get exactly what she was doing, but the palette itself, I do want to see what. I know she's got some photos now of some girls of color using the palette, but mm-hmm. I want to really like dig my hand in the pan and see what kind of color payoff I'm going to get, because you could Photoshop some blue in.
Right.
And when I saw Priyanka using that blue, was looking a little rough. And hey, maybe Priyanka wasn't you know, using.
She wasn't quite familiar with that palette yet.
Yeah, maybe she wasn't familiar with the palette. She didn't know how to get the correct color payoff. But I will say, when I watched Trixie's original video, when she dropped the palette, she was digging in a little deep to get that color payoff on her little swatches on her arm. So even her being a fair girl, when I looked at those swatches on her arm, I was like, they looking a little patchy. They looking a little rough.
Well, I think, you know, it's already hard enough as queens of color to get any type of like pigment payoff the way that we really want our pigment to look. So I would have to wait and see. I got to get the palette in my hand and see if it's going to actually do anything for me. But looking at it on the surface, like I'm looking at these photos, the blues for me personally, I don't do a lot of blue, but they just they seem a little dull in comparison to when Trixie put them on her own eyes. So I would really like to see someone who's of a deeper complexion like do a full review and a full face of it and everything. But for right now, I think it's a little too early for me to say that we can't use it. But also, I'm not really like jazzed about it being something that I would have in my kit for a day to day, you know, when I'm going to the gig. Is this actually going to be something that I bring with me all the time? Probably not.
And we don't do blue. I don't do blue a lot.
Me either. So it's like, oh, okay.
But I don't know, with the advertisements and the way she's selling it, it's super smart. I love the packaging. Mm-hmm. I love the marketing. I love it. Would I do what I saw on the model for a everyday, for a daytime look? Maybe in the 80s. Yes. But today's the day.
I think that's very Trixie though. Cause you know, everything with her is like, there's always like there's a little wink and a little bit of like a humor in the things that she does. She's like daytime realness. It's like, well, you look at Trixie like,
yeah.
So, I mean, there's obviously the joke in there with it. So I'm just like, that's exciting to me about it. The only thing I'm just kind of like, I don't know if it's something that I would get.
It's much really
usefulness out of
difficult. Yeah. It's really difficult to compare this on her individual cosmetics line versus what she has done already with Sugar Pill.
Yep.
With the color payoff that they give. So I'm just kind of like, if you're going to do your own thing, it kind of needs to be comparable to the things that you just kind of featured on.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't see this as a palette for drag queens. I think this is a palette for 14-year-old girls who love Trixie and want to do, like, oh my God,
I have to have a blue.
Like, yeah. So, but I don't see drag queens using this. Like, this palette is not for queens.
I see people doing it. I see people using it.
I was gonna say, I'm sure the girls are going to eat it up.
But I mean, like, it's not functional for a drag queen. I don't need these blues.
I think it's going to be more of like a collector's thing for a lot of the girls, like, because you know, we stand Trixie, we love Trixie. Definitely. So I mean, she's a leader in the community, so they're gonna be like, oh, you know, she was able to launch her cosmetics line and she's an inspiration. So I see that I can definitely see the girls going out and getting it. Do I think it's gonna be their go-to blue? I don't know, we have to wait and see. I haven't touched it yet, so I don't know, but looking at like some of the faces that I've seen done, there might be better blues out there.
Yeah, and here's the thing too. Honestly, I wish that the palette had more, you know. I feel like there's, you know, what, 3 or 4 blues, and then there's a couple of whites, a gray, and a deep gray.
Yeah.
But what about, I mean, if you're gonna call it daytime realness, give us a sunshine yellow, you know, give us there's no warm colors in this.
Yeah.
And she said you can do a full look with this palette, and you absolutely cannot.
I mean, if you're cold and blue,
you can do a full eye.
Yeah, you can do a full eye.
I would say, well, it's Trixie, you know, she does everything tongue in cheek. So there's always like a little bit of I think that's, like I said, I think it's just part of the joke. And she knows it's going to sell because it's her. And I'm going to be quiet because I'm in a competition at her bar right now. So let me shut up.
Hey, this is not a gist. It's just like, we're wondering about the quality.
I know, I'm just being stupid.
Yeah, and you know what? The quality may be A1. I may see somebody with this palette and say, hey, may I try one of these blues? And I might be surprised
exactly
at how well the color pays off.
So maybe it's not too late. we just need a little bit more time,
actually. Yeah. We do, exactly. That's where I'm at with it right now. It's like, let me.
It's not too late.
Let's see the girls. Let's see what the girls pull out with it first.
Everybody, go get yourself a new Trixie palette.
Mm-hmm.
Come out to This Is It and support the doll.
Yes.
And buy this palette and then tell us what you think about it because we want to know.
Exactly. I'm going to say, come back and talk shit with us after.
Yes. Why don't you guys leave a review? And especially the Trixie stands, because I know y'all be finding all of the Trixie stuff. So leave a review with what you think the palette can do.
I'd love to see it.
We love it.
Leave a review telling us about how we should use the palette because it's bomb.
Exactly.
Tell us what you think. Give us a review of the palette in our reviews for the podcast. Okay. What else was I going to say? There was something else I was going to say, but I can't remember what. I'm just having a fun time tonight with y'all. And yeah. Melee, tell us about the upcoming shit you have and give us your socials and where you want people to find you.
Okay. You can find me on most social media, especially on Instagram at Melee the Queen, MeleeTheQueen. I'm around on there every day, like updating, because I'm a psychopath about that. I just like to post something every day to make sure I'm alive, telling everyone to drink water. I'm learning how to sew, and I expect to be traveling more, especially with one of my favorite people in the world that I found recently and has taken me under their wing, Stacy, with Built by Stacy, who is a local Black entrepreneur. She has her own fashion line. She's an accountant. She is raising her family, and she's an independent ass woman. And she's just empowering POC people, period. And I'm so grateful to have her over all the time, just trying to teach me little knickknacks about how to put things together and create looks. I'm hosting at Mary's, Hamburger Mary's in Milwaukee. So I'll be bringing my looks there a lot. I've been at This Is It a lot, trying to suck up to Trixie. And just, I'll be around. Just keep up with my Instas and you'll be seeing me.
We love that, sis. Thank you so much. For y'all that don't know, me and Melee literally started drag together. Like, I had done drag one time prior to meeting Melee, and then we both ended up at auditions for the UW Milwaukee drag show, and I saw her walking in. I was like, I must be in the right place because I see a wig and I see someone that can barely walk in heels. And now...
Oh, bitch.
I was like, hey, look at her now. But
there were so many stairs.
But, my name is Malaya Marvel, and you can find me at Malaya Marvel everywhere, M-A-L-A-I-Y-A, Marvel like the superheroes. And I just want to say I'm proud of you, both of you, and everything that y'all have accomplished. And I'm so excited to be able to share this opportunity with y'all.
Too soon.
So speaking of upcoming projects, I am super excited to be able to do this project with you. We are actually going to be doing the first digital drag show from my alma mater, University of Wisconsin Whitewater, and this year's theme is Dungeons and Drag Queens, and I'm so excited. Anybody who knows me knows that my drag character's name comes from Dungeons and Dragons, and that's where I developed my love for creating characters and all of that neat good stuff that ended up becoming Malaya Marvel, and Melee McQueen will be there with me. So what's your process been like? Are you excited? Do you have your ideas?
You called me out my name.
Oh my gosh, I'm sorry. Girl, it's taking a minute to get used to it. I know it's been a while, but...
Hot Topic. It might have been too soon for that, but...
Damn, why didn't we think of that?
Hold on, wait. Wait, is it Melee the Queen now, not Melee McQueen?
Yes, it's not McQueen anymore. Yeah, I keep forgetting.
Girl, when did this happen? Because I've been calling you McQueen this whole damn time.
Since, like, November, right?
November. Like, on my birthday, I just switched it over because I was like, I need to be my goddamn self with no names, no history attached. It just was a lot.
Well, McQueen was like, you know, you were Alexander McQueen. You're his fashion girl, fashion doll.
Bro, he killed himself.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Can we do that over? Because I just got awkward real quick. Let's try that again.
I am okay. Going to throw in somewhere that your name is the Queen now, and I've been calling your ass Melee McQueen. I swear I called you McQueen at the top of the show.
Okay. So, On the 25th, we will be having the University of Wisconsin Whitewater Drag Show. This is actually the 12th annual drag show, but it's the first year that we're going to be doing it digitally. And I'm so excited to be able to share the stage with my sister, Melee the Queen, because we've been doing this show for, oh my gosh, how many times have we done Whitewater? Like 4 or 5 times?
Girl, 4 or 5 times, including with Jada.
Yep, with Jada Essence Hall, Trixie Mattel, Joey J, they've all been former entertainers who have done the UW Whitewater Drag Show. So it's always a good time. And, you know, I graduated from Whitewater, so I kind of plug them a lot and I give them props.
I'm just glad you plugged me and got me, because they just kept asking and I was surprised every time.
Mm-hmm. It's a really good show to do. Like, it's probably my favorite college show to do.
You ever need that when you walk into a room and they just cheer for no reason?
Go to Whitewater.
That part.
Yeah. Is that it? That you guys have anything else coming up? Any plan? I mean, any things you guys want to promo?
Oh, speaking of Trixie Mattel and being at This Is It, I am currently competing in their showdown competition hosted by Lola Rome. So every other Thursday, we will be doing challenges based off of themes, and we are just going to have a good old time and have a good little club battle between the girls. So if you're ever in town or in the area, come check us out and support Malaya Marvel.
If you're ever in town, just also message me, Melee, so we can get a table together, because it was really full, that one episode of it. It just was so many people there. I almost didn't even get a table.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Melee, they can catch you what? Just about every weekend at Hamburger Mary's?
Almost. I mostly host the second Friday of Mary's, but this month I'm switching with Dominique because daytime work job interference.
Hey, we love a working girl.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you guys are in the Milwaukee area and you want to catch the dolls, you can catch us either at This Is It or Hamburger Mary's. At least them anyway, because I'm not doing any live shows. Your girl is only doing digital shows. You can catch me at, I think all three of us are doing Legends.
Yeah. Yeah, for the Suburbia, our girl out there in New York. We love her. Yeah. She's originally a Milwaukee native, I believe. And yeah, she just keeps the connection alive.
Yeah, so we'll be doing Legends, and it'll be a tribute show to Motown. And it comes out on Zoom on March 21st.
Yep.
Yeah, so
get your tickets. Mm-hmm. We'll put in the link for the tickets below.
I'll put it on my link tree and it'll definitely be in the show notes.
I'm just really excited to translate Motown into my drag somehow.
I know, right?
It'll be cute. I want to see what you do. I think it'll be good.
I'm trying not to disappoint you.
Oh, you'll be fine. I'm just going to wear an afro and pretend I'm Michael Jackson.
I hate you.
And this has been
Too Soon.
Okay, that was a little bit better than last time.
Yeah, we always get a little bit better each time. You know?
Get the hang of it.
We'll ask Gemma's opinion.
Yeah. Oh, and the guys, if you guys want to help us, I'll help us get better sound equipment so Malaya can stop sounding like she's in a dungeon. You can Venmo us. Just Venmo me, and I'll make sure the money goes to the pod. Venmo at Linda Jo. That's at LendaJo. And put like a microphone or something in the note so that way I know where to send it.
Girl, I'm going to fight you. I went and bought a mic today, so hopefully I don't sound like gravel. But yeah. I mean, I might still be in the dungeon. You never
know. Too soon.
All right. This has been so much fun. Love you, dolls.
Bye.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.